I am 31, the 29th of April, 1984, to the 28th of April, 1985. Above, Full of Farts, by Stephen Clarke, 1980. Drummond's Log, Saturday, the 9th of March, 1985. I am full of farts. Gunner Drummond, my arse clapping up Wardour Street, guts as cramped as my A&R office. Whistling Ride of the Valkyries covers the sound, but not the smell. I'm wearing a black Hugo Boss suit and my hair is slicked back with Brill Cream. Balf and I have just signed the SS, Strawberry Switchblade. I have a date with Waterman. I first met him in a pub called The Ship last November, the day You Spin Me Round entered the charts. He was dressed in a red leather suit, a streak of pish running down each arm. He told me that he wanted to build a studio for his boys, Mike and Matt, to work in, but he didn't have a pot to pish in. He was so tired that he'd fallen asleep on the top of his rented mixing desk. This had resulted in him leaving a synth sound running all the way through You Spin Me Round by mistake, and he couldn't afford the studio time to fix it. Burns likes it. I'm ruined, he wept. Be Burns, I asked, between mouthfuls on my second helping of chicken curry. You know him, Bill, he probed. I nodded, and Waterman continued. To be honest, I nicked most of the ideas for You Spin Me Round from Wagner. That was all I needed to hear. Well, if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, I winked. We shook hands on the deal as soon as I had finished my pudding. My New Year's resolution was to destroy every artist from my generation in Liverpool. Revenge for Copy writing Bill Drummond's dead, and Mac severing my ties with the Bunnymen because I'd painted the city toffee colours, blue and white colours, to promote Ocean Rain. I can feel the heat from a hot one running up the back of my shirt as I walk into WEA. Rachel is on reception. Lovely Rachel. I was hoping to get into her skimpy knickers again tonight as my wife's in Malaga. But if she gets a whiff of this, I've no chance. Bill, your father phoned, wanted to know if you could have a pop star singing on one of his poems on Top of the Pops. Said he needs the money to open a Bewley's in the Borders called Here's T. Melrose. She looks like she's going to be sick. Anything else? I inquire, whilst tightening my tie. Ken has been fed and Waterman is in your office. I smile. Thanks, Rach. A slippery number worms its way out of my slacks as I kick open my office door. Waterman looks shocked. So do I. He's dyed his hair green and red. I've done it, Bill. Dennis Nielsen, eat your heart out. I've done it. As I slam the door behind me, the upright piano to my left cackles. There is a large tea chest standing on the right of my desk. The words Dead or Alive are scrawled onto the side that is facing me in what looks like red crayon. Waterman informs me. As soon as You Spin Me Round went to number one, I bundled Pete Burns into this crate and sealed it, just as you asked me to. Goldfinger's rock star. You mean Schrodinger's pop star? I correct him as my left hand dances along the top of the box. I've not spoken to Pete Burns in years. We have little in common. I can hear a faint, muffled sound from within. When did it reach the top spot, Waterman? I pry. Today. It took its time. 17 weeks. You were right, though, Bill. Even with that silly synth line running all the way through, You Spin Me Round is as great a work of art as anything else produced this century, he exclaims. Well, that's why they pay me big bucks to be a bloody A&R-shole, I beam, bending across the trunk and letting rip. Waterman's eyes water as the upright piano lid gently wafts open and close. Chicken curry again? Asked Waterman. Cheese omelette, chips and beans from the cafe in Berwick Street, I reply. Time for you to cough up, Waterman splutters. 400,000 quid will be in your Allied Irish bank account next week, I tell him. Excellent. That will pay for my new studio, the Hit Factory. I will get a fair light like yours. He points towards the piano. That isn't a fair light, Waterman. Ken Campbell has fallen upon hard times and has been living inside my piano since Christmas. I open the lid. Cheapest place in all of London, Ken chortles. Waterman's eyes widen. Have you got any bands that need a hit, Bill? I straighten up. As it happens, I do have a band in need of a hit, and they're dull. I spoke to Alan Horn about them yesterday. He's rotting away in a nearby A&R department. He had no interest in them whatsoever, even after I told him that they have two bass players. We've sold our souls, Bill. When songwriters die, they can only decompose. That's what Alan Horn told me. Waterman claps. Perfect. My boys will handle the music, but you'll need to turn them into pop stars. I can see Ken's eyebrows rising out of the lid of the piano. The rest of his cheeky face soon follows them. Look, Ken. I'm working with another boring band, I say.
Well, Bill, they've got to be brilliant, he smiles.
Aren't you going to tell me anything else, Ken? I ask. His eyes scan around the office to Schrödinger's pop star and back to me.
If you give me 100,000 quid, I'll tell you something else, he grins.
100,000 quid? Where do you think I'm going to get that from? I appeal.
Your expense account, Bill,
he responds. I promise to give him £100,000, and he says,
call the band brilliant.
Waterman falls to the floor laughing. Schrödinger's pop star vibrates, and I shat myself.
Below. Third Culture Kid by Graham McKenzie. Sunday, 29 April 1984. Bill Drummond, currently known as The Man, has just turned 31. He is asleep. REM sleep. Bill Drummond's subconscious, the bit he calls the sentimentalist, is dreaming. He is Leonard Cohen singing So Long, Marianne. He is thinking about loss. The LP is pressed, The Songs of Bill Drummond. A picture of Bill Drummond, as usual in a suit, collar and tie, is shown in sepia tones on the front cover. A phone rings, a door slams, and the dream is forgotten. The sentimentalist cringes in the dark as Bill Drummond takes the call. Something about ticket sales for an Echo and the Bunnymen gig. He is sick of being the man, salvaging other people's half-baked ideas, sitting in boardrooms, a briefcase of balance sheets and annual reports. He wants to be a musician again, an artist, writer, filmmaker, showman. Id, ego and superego. Sigmund Freud split the subconscious into these three categories. Bill Drummond's subconscious is also split into three parts. They are the sentimentalist, currently dominant, usually lingering somewhere in Matthew Street, Liverpool, early 1960s or 1977/78. The Philofax, superseded by a Scion organizer later in the decade, and smartphone in some Orwellian future, and the iconoclast, breaker of rules and windows. They do not map neatly onto Freud's categories. Saturday, 12 May, 1984. The man is with Echo and the Bunnymen in Liverpool. Like the FBI and the CIA and the BBC, the sentimentalist is hammering through a filler by the Beatles, Dig It, from their final LP, Let It Be. The sentimentalist is dwelling on age. He has been 31 years old for almost a fortnight, his 32nd year. The Beatles split when they were 27, George and Paul, and 29, John and Ringo. Their minor jams, better than much of the oeuvre of the bands the man manages, Liverpudlian or otherwise. The iconoclast sneers that you can't succeed as a new act at the age of 31. The Philofax is flicking through six-holed pages, frantically looking for a spreadsheet of age at first number one hit to counter this. For 1984, it's been 41 for Paul McCartney with Pipes of Peace. The sentimentalist liked that one. Then Holly Johnson, 23 years old when Frankie Goes to Hollywood hit the top spot with Relax. The sentimentalist has mixed feelings about this. Juggling near happiness for Johnson, his former bandmate in Big in Japan, with bottle green envy. Nina was 24 when she sang about her 99 red balloons. Lionel Richie, 34, when he first said hello. And now, Duran Duran, Simon Le Bon, 25, jerking around with the reflex. The Philofax is insistent that it is not too late for the man to dye his hair, apply the mascara, and have a number one of his own. The iconoclast argues that there are other ways to rebel, and notes that Duran Duran members often wear a snappy suit. November, December. Collage. HIV. Bill Drummond is reading about a new virus. R.I.P. Michel Foucault, French philosopher, 15 October 1926, 25 June 1984. The iconoclast prefers Jacques Derrida and deconstructionism. Third Culture Kid, TCK. The sentimentalist is conflicted again. No part of Bill Drummond is thinking about Julian Cope's new song, Bill Drummond Said. As Julian Cope said, these things are sent to try us. The sentimentalist is thinking instead about Julian Cope's explanation of Bill Drummond's restlessness. He is back in 1978, having a deep discussion with Julian Cope. Drummond is standing with electric guitar, about to go on stage at Eric's Club with Cope, Pete Burns, Budgie, Ian Brody, spring 1978. It's a one-off gig, a forgotten conversation. Drummond is telling them about his childhood. Born in South Africa, time in Lexington, North Carolina. He skates over his years in the Scottish colony of Corby, Northamptonshire. All far removed from his spiritual home, splashing around in Penkiln Burn and Newton Stewart, Scotland. He is demonstrating his exoticism to his erstwhile friends and bandmates. Cope, keen to show his college education, as usual shouts above the din of the Liverpool club, "You're a third culture kid because you grew up somewhere different to your cultural roots. You have no sense of belonging, commitment or attachment." The iconoclast does not consider these to be negative characteristics. OCD. Peter Blake, of Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club band cover, has designed a new record sleeve, Band-Aid's Do They Know It's Christmas, straight in at number one. Another point on the graph. The Filofax notes Holly Johnson's involvement, his fourth number one of 1984. The Iconoclast, grumpy at the end of another year of missed opportunities, notes the furore about inaugural Turner Prize winner Malcolm Morley, displaced person, TCK. The Iconoclast is catalyzed by controversy. March-April 1985 came, saw, conquered. Sunday, 3rd March 1985, the man is making soup, trying not to think about work tomorrow. He is listening to BBC Radio 3, which is playing choral music by an ensemble called The 16. He is not in the mood for their carefully rehearsed polyphony. He switches station, adjusting the aerial. Bruno Brooks is presenting the Top 40 on BBC Radio 1 again. The Filofax plots another point on the graph. Dead or alive, frontman Pete Burns, 25 years old, had their first number one with You Spin Me Around, Like a Record. Burns is another bit player from Eric's Club, 1978. Enough is enough. The Iconoclast and the Filofax team up, displacing the sentimentalist. They unpick and document the ingredients of this new number one success. They note songwriters, producers, Stock Aitken Waterman's S-A-W input. The man doesn't blink when Saw agrees to produce the new band he has just signed. Brilliant. The TCK has already moved on, ripped it up and started again. He's had enough of doing A&R for a record label WEA. He's sick of three-letter acronyms. He's going to have a number one of his own.